Welcome to TP Talks, PwC's Global Transfer Pricing podcast series, where PwC tax professionals share their perspectives on key transfer pricing developments. My name is Dana Hart, and joining me today, I have Kunj Vaidya, the transfer pricing leader for PwC India. Also joining me from PwC India is transfer pricing partner Manish Sabharwal. Welcome, gentlemen. So today, Kunj and Manish will be giving you an update on transfer pricing in India, including recent tax rate rationalization and its potential transfer pricing implications, BEPS implementation, litigation and the APA journey so far, digital taxation rules in India and how India proposes to implement SEP, as well as India's draft guidelines on PE attribution. Kunj and Manish, over to you.
Thanks, Dina, for the introduction, and thank you everyone for joining in into this Indian podcast on recent transfer pricing developments in India. This is Manish Sabharwal. I'm a partner in the Indian practice. I'm joined by Kunj, who leads the Indian transfer pricing practice. Thank you, Kunj, for joining.
Thanks, Manish.
So, in this podcast, we are going to cover, like I said, recent transfer pricing developments. The news from India on transfer pricing side has always been a bit on the gloomier, at least in the last few years. But let's for a change, couldn't start on a positive note. So last month saw a pretty big tax incentive, which was given by the Indian government to corporates, right? So just to get into the details, the government has reduced the headline corporate tax rate in India from 30% to 22%, which is a straight away 8% reduction. On top of it, for manufacturing companies, the tax rate has been almost half. So from 30%, it is now 15%. So it's a big incentive. And the government is, of course, trying to encourage companies to put more manufacturing into India and, of course, to put more investments into India. So Kunj, great initiative by the Indian government.
Absolutely. Now, this is sort of the stuff that we really need to help the economy. And let's, as we go through some of the rest of the discussion on this podcast, there would be a silver lining that allows the tax office and their actions to align with government's strategy and requirement of the country to bring in more investments.
Sure. And just one point on this aspect that, of course, the headline tax rates have been reduced. Yet at the same point of time, if you go for this concessional tax regime, you would not be entitled to other tax incentives which would be available. So there would be a requirement, at least for some companies who may have, as an example, brought forward MAT credit, or who may have some brought forward losses pertaining to some of the expenses, to assess, do they want to go for the concessional regime today, or perhaps there is a point for them to continue in the old regime. So just a point that if you have an Indian operation wherein you have been claiming some of the additional depreciation or some of those expenses, you may just like to look at the position and what's the right time for you to jump into the concessional regime.
For that matter, it's also important to note that the lower rate applies at the entity level. So if you have a unit which is tax holiday and a unit that is not tax holiday, you will need to do the analysis to understand what would be better for you as you select the choose the option one or the other, because it's not like you apply one rate to one section and the other one, it's at the entity level.
Sure, thanks. So moving on, I think another key area which has been hogging the highlight as far as transfer pricing goes is, of course, the BEPS initiative. India is part of G20, which has been driving this program, and Indian government has been at the forefront, not only in terms of developing the implementation and what should be the norms, but also implementing that in our tax law. A quick recaptures on Bakshan Plan 4, India has got a rule of interest to EBITDA of 30%. So if you have an interest which exceeds 30% of EBITDA, then that would be disallowed. It can be carried forward for next 8 years, but still there would be a timing impact if you don't get it in the first year. So that's what India is doing on Action Plan 4.
It's limited to related party interest, though.
So, thanks for adding that. So it's, of course, related to interest paid to related parties, or any borrowings which are made from third parties but which are guaranteed by the related party. So that is also covered. On Action Plan 7, again, India has adopted in the Income Tax Act a reduced threshold for triggering permanent establishment. So we have a lot of companies in India which operate as marketing support service provider. India is now saying, consistent with Action Plan 7, that if the local entity plays a principal role resulting in conclusion of contract, even that would trigger a permanent establishment. Of course, this is one change in the law. There are some treaties which have been amended considering the MLI, which India has entered into effective 1st April 2020. So you would have to see that whether the country from with which the marketing entity is coming from, whether that treaty is also reflecting this clause. But if the treaty has also been amended based on MLI, you must look at your marketing support service footprint in India and see whether it is creating a permanent establishment. So Kunj, again, a lot of focus on marketing support entities, India being a big market, that would have a huge implication for a lot of multinationals, right?
We're talking about market, absolutely, yes. So India has for some time been maintaining that there has to be a return for market as a value driver or a value contributor to the overall value for the business. And what we've just seen just yesterday, the OECD's proposal on digital as well, which is much broader than digital now, if you look at it. And that's again going in the same direction where market has to be given a return. A formulary-based return is what is being contemplated. Some initial reactions from the Indian authorities have been that, and they have always maintained that it's not limited. These actions are not limited to digital alone. If there is a market-level contribution, then there has to be some return attributed to that, which now if you look at amount B in the proposal, that's what it addresses.
Sure, thanks. In terms of other key area, on Action Plan 8, specifically intangibles, again, a big issue from an Indian standpoint, largely based on two reasons. One, we have a lot of captives and cost-plus companies in India, which have historically said that, you know, we are a low-risk entity and we don't think we're performing critical function. Now, with this DEMPE concept coming in the BEPS Section Plan 8, a lot of Indian tax authorities are asking the question that, is your captive in India not performing the DEMPE function? Have you done the DEMPE review? Do you think that India is a low risk, or should we be entitled to a bigger pie? So again, very, very big impact on, because consider the number of captives which we have, which has fueled the growth in 90s and 2000s, again, a big issue, Kunj.
True, and especially the companies that are engaged in R&D and engineering kind of work, there is a question that the Indian authorities have been raising on how much they are contributing to the overall value chain. Is it really something that's amenable to a cost-plus return versus something which is contribution-based? And over time, what we have seen is something that started with a 10-people shop and today is 1,000 people begs a lot of question. And we've consistently are seeing people being appointed into global roles, regional roles, and having responsibility at that level. That in itself does not mean that it cannot be cost plus, but it does beg a lot of these questions, right? In addition to that, you have patents which are registered in the names of the Indian employees. Some of the new developments in the world of data analytics, there could be newer fields like that where the entire team is being set up in India from scratch. So you don't even have people outside of India who are focused or with that kind of capability, which then leads you to ask the second question, that is there real control and supervision and a capability to have control and supervision outside of India? So these are things that companies need to be more mindful of and start preparing and creating the support and documentation, which furthers the fact that, yes, these activities could be happening, but what's the level of contribution? And does it really still come back to the same kind of a markup that you are having today? There is no more return than what you're getting as markup. So there is an additional layer that we are talking about.
Right. And of course, that's on the captives, but again, on the marketing intangible also, while historically we have adopted a very simpliciter approach, saying that, you know, let's do a bright line and let's do some of those intensity adjustments and see if India's marketing spend is high. But off late in the last one or two audits, the show cause notices have been very categorical in terms of asking this critical question, where is your DEMPE? So I think the message is that for companies which are selling products, which have a branded products footprint in India, they also need to assess that. Let's identify what are the DEMPE functions and clearly document based on, not only document in terms of just writing it, but also in terms of capturing some of the key mails as an example.
Evidencing is really the key word. Right. You're right. You're in marketing intangibles, service charges, royalties.
Right.
You need to be able to demonstrate that you actually got this, right, and you got the benefit of it. We can question how much benefit was it, how much it is worth or not, but the fact that you got it, that's the first level, because the tax authorities are, like you just said, Manish, their starting point is to say you didn't get anything. And if that level of documentation can be maintained, which does exist with companies, it's a matter of putting in a little more effort. And it can be done smartly with some of the newer ways of doing it that we've been working on. But yes, that is the line to go.
Yeah, because I think the way I see this, Kunji, is that instead of tax authorities coming up with their DMP assessment and then alleging that, look, we have picked up this document from public domain, which says that the local entity is performing the function, it's always important for companies to have the first mover advantage. So I would rather suggest to my client that, look, you assess it first. You have a detailed and comprehensive documentation. Perhaps make it as part of your primary transfer pricing documentation so that as and when any question comes up, you have the first starting point rather than the tax authorities drawing something on the white slate, which perhaps would not be a pretty picture. I mean, I think the way I see it.
And there are so many additional sources of this information that's coming up, some in public, some internal, but they are asking for that information. And once they ask, it's hard to say no. So for things like, you have senior people of the organization, multinationals, coming into India and making media statements. Now, how do they reflect on what you are doing in India? There has to be a connection that can be drawn. The other thing is the LinkedIn profiles of people, the company website, what it is talking about. These are all external stuff. Internally, we have seen tax authorities even now start to go to ask for job profiles in the HR system. Not only that, ask for self-assessment of people. Now, you can always argue and explain a lot of the information that will be found in all of this, but if we are not working proactively around this information, then you're just opening yourself and one after another, you'll be, you know, before you know, you'll be explaining a whole lot of things than being prepared for it.
Exactly. Good. So just going on to the next action plan, on action plan 13, India has, of course, implemented the three-tier TP documentation. So we have our own version of master file. I know some of the companies had a challenge in terms of accumulating and compiling the four additional requirements which are there in the Indian law. But India is doing quite a lot of stuff on master file and CBCR. The first filing were done for financial year 16-17, which incidentally are going to come up for audit starting January 2020 onwards. We do know, based on our discussion, also based on some disclosures which have been made by the policymakers, that there's a big, big administrative machinery which is being set up, and we are calling it a risk assessment unit, which would have the responsibility to evaluate and analyze the CBCR data and the master file data. We also know, based on our discussions, that they have made hiring as an example of data scientist in that division, and India seems to be gearing up. Kunj, I think they seem to be pretty excited that, you know, earlier version wherein they just looked at the India picture, now they have all of this CBCR master file data. They seem to be having a pretty good time. I mean, thinking how they can analyze some of those and make the adjustments, perhaps.
True. And the higher markups was essentially a reflection of, or rather a result of, not having any other information, and therefore saying the only thing I can do is have a higher markup. But like you're saying, now they have access to all this information. There is a Director General of Risk Assessment that has been set up. There are people in there who are more data scientists and analysts in that team than tax people in that team. The only silver lining we have there is that there is a circular which binds the department talking about the confidentiality of that information, and that information will not be released just like that. But we yet to see what does that really mean. One aspect I would recommend, and what we are working with companies, is not only what's in your data. So it's definitely very important for you to know what's in your data so that you are prepared for it. But at the same time, do a little more homework to understand what's in the comparables data, what's in your peers' data. And that may not be the same comparables as peers, and comparables will be very different, right? Because of transfer pricing, the way we do it, the peers will never appear in comparables because of related party transactions. But the tax office will have access to those peers' data as well. And they will start looking at that more, the old school secret comparables kind of thing. And they will have access to that information. They'll come better prepared. And that's the other thing that you need to be very mindful of.
Yeah, so I think the message which we are getting is that perhaps gone are the days of one-sided approach and one-sided benchmarking. Welcome to the world of two-sided approach, where the tax authorities not only look at the Indian side, but also look at what is happening on the other side.
Or multi-sided, right? So increasingly, you're right, increasingly they are asking the same question. All right, you are you are a cost plus in India. This is what you do in India. So 10% stays in India, 90% is outside. What is that 90% for? And the real answer to that is, look, the 90% is for the entrepreneurial function and the risk that I'm taking. So it cannot be attributed to different elements. That 90% may be zero tomorrow or maybe negative as well. So there is nothing in particular ascribes to, but that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, but yeah, I think very well made point, because I've gone to so many tax hearings, right? When the tax authorities say, you guys really love the word low risk, right? So you have low risk manufacturer, you have low risk distributor, you have low risk service provider. And I think all of that earlier simplistic world, right, wherein you have entrepreneur and everything in India was low risk, is going to change. And I think it's very important to assess what is the value in the organization, what are the key functions, and whether India's role has still remained a low risk or has it actually moved notches ahead. And hence the transfer pricing needs to be aligned with that. So that's there in terms of the issues which are coming. But I think one silver lining which has remained in transfer pricing for the last few years, of course, has been the APA program. It has shaped up really, really well, Kunj. Of course, you were involved in the initial discussion with the policymakers as the program was shaping up. And it's fantastic to see that in the last 6 years, we have really, really traveled a lot of steps in terms of this program. So just in terms of statistics, some 1,300 odd APAs being filed in 6 years and 300 APAs being signed. These are humongous numbers, Kunj.
They are huge, because you know this is interesting. When we deal with clients on a day-to-day basis, there is obviously some level of frustration, very understandably, that it's taking time, it's taking longer, there are questions that are coming up. But let's look at the other side of it. How many countries are there that have signed up 3,300 APAs in a six-year period? I don't think there may be many. Probably they didn't get that many applications to start with. Right? We have a different circumstances in that sense. So the machinery is working. The other thing is, how prepared are you going into the program? That is what has really delayed certain cases versus some other ones. Of course, there is a bit of hesitance, or there was a bit of hesitance in dealing with more complex case in the initial years as the country was learning. And this is not to sound overly defensive of the country, but I believe, truly believe, that there are the program's working really well. It's moving forward. Off late, though, last couple of months, and this may remain for another month or two, there has been a bit of slowdown in it. And that's because of some of the personnel changes that are happening. So some of the people are moving within the program. We'll need to let the dust settle on that one before it again picks up. But the government remains very committed to this one program, which perhaps is the only thing that has worked in transfer pricing so far.
No, I agree. And I think if I look at the benefits, right, come on, we're looking at 9 years of audit protection. So you can go 5 future years, 4 past years. We're looking at no compliance required for the APA years. And we also have a renewal program, which seems to be, because we know as a matter of fact that having worked on some renewal stats, also pretty effective.
So I do want to say something on that. Before I come to renewal, yes, it does cover 9 years. And one more thing to keep in mind, a lot of our clients would get the frustration of how much information do I need to provide, how much more information they're looking for. But the APA process and the APA itself, their work is subject to internal review. And therefore, a lot of times, some of the information that is being asked for is also to complete the files and complete the records. They may not really have these information, may not really have much of a direct impact on the APA itself, and they know it as well. So it's important that these are the nuances that are understood both the parties to be able to move the cases forward. Coming to renewal, though, it's both ways. Yes, there are renewals which are working really fast. At least the process is starting really fast. But then there are cases where they are wanting to go deeper. So I was recently in a renewal site visit, and I experienced it as though it was a fresh APA. So if there were things that were not fully looked at in the past, it's not as if to say, okay, you have an APA, we are just going to same application, same outcome, let's just sign it tomorrow. No, it will be an involved process.
Yeah, no, I think it's I think the proof of pudding lies in eating. So we have, like I said, 1,300 APAs filed and 300 number. This program has to be successful to be attracting so many companies. Another interesting development which has happened in the last few months is India's approach on attribution of profits to permanent establishment. Historically, India's courts have consistently held that if your transfer pricing is right, if it captures all the functions which are being performed, then there is no further attribution of profits to the PE. It has also, of course, said that for any profit attribution to the PE, you have to follow the OECD's recommended separate entity approach, which is nothing but the arm's length principle. So Indian government had formed a committee just to look at the principle on how you should attribute profits to the permanent establishment. And the committee came up with its recommendations. Of course, these are recommendations. These are not the government's line as of now. But this committee, which is chaired by government policymakers, it has come up with the recommendation that the arm's length principle may not be the answer to profit attribution for permanent establishment. What the committee has said is that there are essentially two approaches. So one is that of attributing profits. One is you look at the demand side approach, wherein you look at the sales and you attribute profits based on the sales entity. Other is the supply side approach, which is the historical approach that wherever the manufacturing functions, wherever the activities performed are located, you attribute profits to that country or that jurisdiction. The committee felt that the right way for India to tax profits in the hands of permanent establishment is a mixed approach. So they have come up with an interesting formula. It's called C. All of us are calling it C. They are not calling it perhaps C, which is SEA, which is sales, employees and assets. So the government is saying that, you know, if you have Indian operations and there's a permanent establishment, we are going to attribute profits based on sales, employees and assets. So they would look at the sales in India vis-a-vis the total sales for the Indian operations, similar for employees, similar for assets, equal weightage to each of these factors. And based on that, you would attribute profits to the permanent establishment. Another thing for companies which may be making losses. So the government is saying that, look, you may be making losses, but we would assume that the EBITDA from Indian operations is not less than 2%. So there is a lower threshold of 2%, which they mentioned. A very, very dramatic development in India. And of course, if it is incorporated in the law, Kunsh, it would have implication for many companies.
Well, it would have implication for many companies, especially the way the tax office is looking at it, because the what is it, about 60, 70 odd page report, 80 pages of report. First 60 pages talks about how this can be done without changing any of the treaty provisions, which itself is a big part of it. And that's why it could have big implications. However, we still, you know, I believe that clearly you got to go through the treaty changes for something like this to come in. And therefore, one has to see how that would really impact. Where you don't have treaty coverage, you would get hit with it immediately. And that actually would bring me to another point here. Recent development, India-US in particular, where India's position is that the treaty does not cover single-member disregarded LLCs. And the moment it takes that position, once you are in there, that means you don't have any cover under the treaty. And you don't have any other cover under the treaty. You don't have any other benefits like the lower withholding tax or dispute resolution mechanisms that you could get through the treaty. And that is including the PE definition, right, which would directly lend you into these things. So far, the thresholds are not yet prescribed, as you know, for SEP, and therefore we don't know how that would go. But it's interesting to see with recent developments from OECD and how these things are aligning itself in some ways. India's recommendations are finding its way into how OECD is progressing on the proposals as well. One will have to wait and see how it all pans out. There is the fourth element of user as well in the formula, in case you are into those kind of businesses. But it's not, none of this is going to be easy to deal with, and I would expect there to be more challenges. And the only hope I would have is, on one side, we have our government really wanting to make it easy to do business in India and bring more foreign investments into India and to foster that environment. The tax has to walk a very balancing line. And so I'm hoping that is something would allow there to be rationality in the process.
Yeah, and I think one point perhaps on the P attribution report would be that while they are seeing transfer pricing is not going to be the answer, one thing which the companies can explore is that I should have as much exhaustive function analysis as possible in the TP documentation and make sure that all my functions which are performed in India, they're rewarded appropriately. This would help reduce the PE exposure, because essentially if you have an Indian footprint, PE is nothing but the functions which are not performed within the particular subsidiary footprint and which are not being taxed appropriately. So while it may not be a foolproof measure, but that can be one of the support which companies can take up, that look, I have done a very, very detailed whatever functions which you're saying they already captured. So if there is no additional function, then technically there should not be any additional permanent establishment exposure and perhaps no attribution. So Thank you so much. These were the points which we wanted to cover. Kunj, what do you think on the way forward, dynamic, fast change world, and so also for tax?
I want to leave with a positive note. Like I said, the intention of the government to make things easier for businesses in India should allow for some rationality in this process. So let's keep our fingers crossed for that.
My fingers are crossed too.
Over to you, Dana.
Thank you, Kunj and Manish, for giving our listeners an update on India transfer pricing. I'd also like to thank our listeners. If you have any questions about this podcast, please contact the speakers. You can find their contact information in the description of this episode on our TP Talk site at www.pwc.com/TP Talks. Thank you.